Keem Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin. And let's see.
Tim Gallagher, basketball historian, joins the Bullseye again. Tim, thanks a lot for joining. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. A lot going on, obviously, last night in the world of the NBA. And it didn't have anything to do with the Bulls and Sixers, that's for sure. Kobe Bryant's last game, what a story there with 60 points and a victory for the Lakers. And also, you know, one of the big iconic records, 72-10. That record is broken. My beloved 95-96 Bulls are now second place behind the Warriors. So I'd like to get your thoughts on both.
Exactly. Well, and as a basketball historian, as I'm designated here on the Bullseye podcast, it's I remember that Lakers 69-13 team and remembering how incredible that was in the 33-game win streak. And you kind of thought that's never going to happen again. The 33, that may not happen again, but in terms of just somebody beating that record, and then obviously the two Bulls teams that did it, and then last night seeing Golden State put it together. And I think the other things, kind of the subtitles of that historic 73-9 record is never losing two games in a row, not losing to the same team twice, just things that have never been done in the history of the league, which you can say all you want about players at different eras and travel and whatever it may be, that, you know, this is just something to cherish and really enjoy in the way the Warriors go about their business. So we'll see. I think it will be a little tarnished if they are not able to cap it off with the championship, right? So those other teams that have had those records that have stood for some time ended up winning the championship. So it certainly looks like Golden State's on their way to do that. Although it was interesting, I saw them on television when they struggled and lost in overtime to Minnesota, and then they had a real tough game at Memphis, which they somehow, just like they've done a number of times, somehow pulled it out of somewhere where they won the game. They weren't really playing well, but somehow found a will in a way. And boy, it seems like even though Curry and Thompson put up the ridiculous numbers, it's the heart and soul of Draymond Green that kind of gets him there, it seems. But after that game, I saw Steph Curry interviewed, and it was really the first time since he's become such a superstar that I didn't really see that sparkle in his eye, right? You know, when you see him interviewed, he just has that glow, right? That rock star like glow to him. And after that game at Memphis, that's the first I'd seen that he didn't have that. And you know, I'm over the top in terms of noticing little nuances in every little detail. And I thought, wow, he's really out of gas here, right? He's spent. And then even looking at Kerr, he seemed to look really fragile to me some on the sidelines. And I know he's had some health issues, which have probably affected him certainly. And just the stress of chasing greatness is probably, you know, in its own way, as difficult as coaching a team that's struggling or having difficulties, you know, where there's such a high expectation and going for these levels that have never been achieved before in the history of the league. But anyway, I was a little concerned seeing the body language and physical nature of Kerr there. But then they were able to beat San Antonio in San Antonio, and I think that was significant for a couple reasons. One is it ended, the Spurs had a 39-game home win streak, and regardless of who Pop was resting or playing, and he was playing pretty much the full group that night. Plus the fact that the Warriors hadn't won a regular season game there since 1997, right? And I know these players were,
wow. Yeah.
That was long before these players ever came along, but those are things that get talked about and get remembered. So I think it seemed to really get them out of that little funk they were in, you know, losing to Minnesota at home and then beating Memphis, but that game seemed to take a lot out of them. So they seemed to get their mojo back in that win at San Antonio for a couple of different reasons, and then pretty much cruised to the victory last night. And so I was kind of flipping back and forth with that. And when the Warriors seemed to have things in hand, and it looked like even though Curry had 46, he was going to sit the fourth quarter. So I went back to watch the Lakers, and boy, that was compelling, just that, you know, it was kind of shocking, the number of shot attempts. Well, I guess not shocking, because you kind of knew with Kobe's last game, you know, all bets were off in terms of what might happen and what green light he would have. But just his shot count and point total started increasing. And I mostly watched it on the Laker broadcast, the Laker feed that we get out here. And so it got compelling in that Kobe's numbers started going up and up, and he's getting toward 40. And then the Lakers came from behind to make it a game as well. And so it was something to behold. And I've never been a huge Kobe fan. I've appreciated his greatness, but boy, that was certainly compelling viewing, seeing him end his career like that. I mean, it's pretty unprecedented in its own way.
Absolutely. Back to the Warriors before we get into this. I did want to mention one really quick thing before we forget. The Warriors, I thought it was interesting that, you know, some of the games they lost were against some of the worst teams in the league. The Bucks, you know, Timberwolves, obviously not a great team. I think they lost to Denver. Can't recall.
The Lakers. Lakers beat them
on. The Lakers, there we go. That was and not only did they lose, they got destroyed. It was really kind of strange, some of those losses. And I have to go back. I know the Bulls had a couple upsets, right, where they lost bad there to a couple of those, out of those 10 losses, but I thought that was pretty interesting. But one thing I do remember distinctly was Ron Harper, and it don't mean a thing without the ring, and the t-shirt they had up. And I really do feel like Golden State is a lot more susceptible to not winning a title than that Bulls team was in 95-96. I just think it seems like to me San Antonio or Oklahoma City, I know they'll only probably have to play one of those two, the Clippers, there's some good teams we're going to have to go through, and then you'll have LeBron waiting for you. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I still think they're the favorites, obviously, but I don't think they're the overwhelming favorite that those Bulls teams were.
Right. Well, and I think you touched on something with the matchups, and we saw it this year with the Bulls. Obviously, a team like Charlotte was much improved, but not a dominant team, and boy, the Bulls couldn't seem to solve playing them at all, right? And so a lot of it is matchups. Well, another team that gave Golden State a lot of trouble was Boston. You know, they beat Golden State at Golden State just a few weeks ago, and then the game back in Boston earlier in the season really was a game Golden State had no business winning, and that was another one of those miracles. Somehow they came from behind and tied it.
That's
got
right.
Into overtime and found a way. So a lot of it is matchups, and I think that's what will make some of the playoff rounds pretty intriguing, and we can get into the playoff brackets here soon. But you're right. You just don't know. I mean, we were all counting on a Spurs-Warriors Western Conference final last year. You know, we were sure of it almost, right? And what do you know? The Clippers beat the Spurs in an incredible series, the seven-game series, but in the first round, the Spurs were out. So not many people would have expected that. So it'll be interesting to see how things do play out from that standpoint.
So
I agree.
They
need that championship to really cap off everything the Warriors have done. It's sad that it will diminish what they've accomplished so far. But without
but
that championship,
will.
You're right. It'll always have an asterisk by it.
Yeah, well, absolutely will. If they don't win the title, I mean, they'll be 70 the greatest record of all time. But that next sentence, everybody will say, but they didn't win the title. You know, the Bulls won the title, so they have to finish this off, and there's a long way to go between now and then. So sorry to interrupt you in your thoughts on Kobe.
Right. Well, and one other quick point, and then I'll get to some of my Kobe moments. Well, the first thing I thought about last night was the Kobe finish, which was incredible, 60 points. Who would have thought, there's very few players in the history of the league that have ever scored 60 points in a game, much less a player that's 37 years old with all the mileage he has on him. And, you know, he looked physically exhausted out there and somehow was willing himself to – it kind of reminded me a little bit of Jordan and the flu game, in the finals, right? Somehow he willed himself to do it. Now, obviously, there wasn't as much at stake in terms of playing for the championship like in that Jordan game, but it was almost like Kobe was just willing himself to scoring and seeing the Lakers through one last time. But it was almost like a public relations dream for the Lakers, though, because now everyone's going to forget, at least for a while or maybe forever, that that was the worst season in Laker franchise history. More losses than they've ever had in the history of the franchise, and there's some unsettledness in the front office. And but here, people are just going to really remember the glorious way that Kobe went out in the 60-point game, and this season was an homage to his career. And
great
so
point.
For the Lakers, they lucky for them, right? This kind of overshadows. I was talking to some buddies, and they use the old lipstick on a pig analogy, right? So this Kobe brilliant season finale, and and seeing him off into the sunset, in as glorious a way as possible, really overshadowed all the unfortunate things that happened with the Lakers season. But with Kobe, and then the other thing with the Warriors' success this year, I texted you about this too, that Jerry West, who I often paid my respects to in past podcasts, not only him as a player, but as an executive in the league, he really had his fingerprints over both of those games last night. You could argue two most significant games of the season. Well, he's the one that traded for Kobe. Somehow, Kobe, the 13th pick of the first round. I mean, how many players that had the career that Kobe had were drafted as late as him, right? The 13th pick. Think about it. And Jerry West was the one who worked him out, saw what the potential was there. He saw the future before almost anyone else did, made the trade to get him to the Lakers, and obviously we know what he's done over the last 20 years. But then Jerry West is also an executive advisor with the Golden State Warriors and has been since the new ownership took over, and they've been on this ride to unbelievable success. So just was interesting to me that Jerry West had his fingerprints on both of those, just kind of like Steve Kerr, who played on that 72-10 Bulls team, and now he's coached the 73-9 Golden State team. It's interesting that some of these common threads, it's just not a coincidence that these guys are involved right there. It shows you what kind of impact they have on the game.
Yeah, great stuff. Good point. I never really thought about that with Jerry West. How about some of your memorable moments for Kobe? What are your top three?
Yeah, I have a couple of them. And, interestingly enough, I just saw Kobe. I mean, not like we're friends or anything, but I was at the NCAA regional games in Anaheim just a couple weeks ago. So Duke against Oregon and then Oklahoma State, Texas A&M. And through some fortunate connections, had really good seats. And shortly before tip-off of the Duke-Oregon game, there was this buzz and murmur in the crowd, and I looked over, and the Duke fans and family and so forth were just to our left, like a section or so over to our left at the angle. I was behind the basket. Well, it's Kobe, and he's coming to the game, and he sits in the Duke section right behind Coach K's wife. So I'm sure there's a connection with them, with USA Basketball and Kobe having played in the Olympics, and maybe beyond that as a connection, but just the buzz of 20,000 people in an arena of Kobe, of somebody just walking in and taking your seat was quite a spectacle to see. And then not long after that, the Oklahoma team ended up sitting kind of just to the right of us. They'd finished playing. They beat Texas A&M, and Buddy Hield was obviously a key player in college basketball this year, number 24, not coincidentally. He wears that number because of Kobe, and that was the person that sparked his love of the game and pursuit of basketball excellence. Well, you could see the players noticing that Kobe was there. He had not been there to watch the Oklahoma-Texas A&M game, but was there to watch the Duke game. And so just the excitement you could see in these guys' faces that, gosh, Kobe's here. This is a Jordan-like vibe in the building, right, with that. And Buddy ended up working his way over to where Kobe was sitting, got a picture taken with him, and that made some of the newspapers and some social media. And then Kobe was back again on Saturday for the regional final, same seat. Obviously, the Duke people were gone by then because Oregon manhandled Duke in that game, but he was there for the Oklahoma-Oregon game. And that was the game, and I don't know if you saw some of the highlights of it, but Buddy Hield really went off, you know, 37 points. And several times in the game, you might have seen Buddy pulling his jersey, like players do a lot, and he was pointing it at Kobe, like, number 24, I'm doing this for you. You're in the house. That's why, I want to show you what I've got. So anyway, it was a pretty neat exchange, just seeing Kobe in the gym those two different occasions, and seeing how the crowd reacted to him, and seeing how even the players on the court reacted to him being a fan at the game. It was quite a spectacle.
How did he acknowledge him? When he did that? How was Kobe? Was he acknowledging the players? What was his reaction like?
Well, he definitely was with Buddy, and because they had that brief exchange on Thursday, and then. It was made known that Buddy wore number 24 as a tribute to Kobe. And I believe Buddy Hield's from the Bahamas and, grew up in very humble circumstances and somehow got a hold of a VHS of Kobe, when he was a young boy and started watching that. And that really was his spark to learn the game. And so essentially his whole life, He had modeled himself after Kobe, and then here in one of the biggest games of his life to get to the Final Four, he goes off for 37, and Kobe's sitting right there courtside to take it all in. So just watching the exchange between them, and Kobe was definitely acknowledging him, not necessarily outwardly rooting for him, but, they were definitely making eye contact, and Kobe was noticing. That was kind of interesting, too, as a fan, watching Kobe, and there were some other scouts, and Danny Ainge was sitting not far from us. So as much as I'm into all the details of the game, for me, it's fun to watch them watch the game, right? When something happens that I think was spectacular or interesting, how are they reacting to it? So the fact that Kobe was in the house there, that was, it was pretty fun to see.
As a quick aside, I'm a big fan of Buddy. I think he's got a potentially great pro career ahead of him. What do you foresee him as? And I mean, he can shoot the ball, which is pretty big with me. Where do you see him going? And as a pro career, do you think it's bright or, where do you?
Well, I think I think it does, especially in the today's NBA game where there's a premium on outside shooting and 3-point shooting, and some of those shots he was hitting against Oregon were definitely NBA 3-point range for sure. I don't think this is a real strong draft. I know we touched on it a little bit in the last podcast. I see him going somewhere between, say, 5 and 12. I don't know that he's a top 5 pick, really. But since it is, I think, a little bit of a soft draft, and I think that the fact that he's a 4-year college player, he's improved an awful lot as a player over his career. Looks like a hard worker, good attitude, being able to shoot the ball. Is he an NBA All-Star at some point? I'm not sure. I'm thinking of him, maybe as a J.R. Smith type contributor, at least, right? With the ability to shoot the ball from deep like that. Hopefully he'll not have the range of character of J.R. Smith and be a little more focused on just taking care of his business. But I can see him having that kind of explosiveness in terms of being able to, go through bursts of scoring like that and having that kind of deep range. So, I'm a fan of Buddy, and it'll be fun to see where he goes. Now, I have a couple other Kobe thoughts as well as kind of my other favorite Kobe moments, I guess, as a player. Certainly a lot of people point to the 81-point game, and I was thinking about that, and obviously over the years we've gotten all the Laker games televised out here in Southern California. But I remember watching that 81-point game against Toronto, and as Kobe started getting closer, got to 50, and there was still a lot of time left in the game. It was 2006, so my sons were about 5 and 10 years old, and I remember getting them out of bed. It was a school night, but I was watching it, and I sensed that history was going to happen. So had to negotiate with my wife, but I said, this is important. I need to get the guys out of bed to come. They got to watch this. This is something special.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
So that's my personal memory of that 81-point game. But I think the one Kobe moment that always kind of sticks in my mind is when he did that lob pass to Shaq that was kind of the final dagger to beat the Blazers in the Western Conference Finals in 2000, you know, where the Lakers had a lead. They'd come back. It was game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. The Blazers had been winning basically the whole game, and that was a Blazer team that included Scottie Pippen, as some Bull fans might remember.
Rasheed Wallace, yep. Steve Smith.
Yep. Detlef Schrempf, Arvydas Sabonis. I mean, you know, there was some talent on that team. The play where Kobe penetrated in the lane and just, you know, Shaq kind of gave him a little nod, like, just put it up there and I'll get it. And Kobe lobbed it. Shaq did the one-hand alley-oop flush dunk. Basically, you know, that was the final blow to get them the series and to get to the finals. So some reason that moment, in my mind, comes out initially as my favorite Kobe memory. And the other thing I remember seeing him, as I mentioned, I think, on the podcast, I've been going for decades to the Southern California Summer League, the LA Summer League, which really doesn't exist anymore. Now it's pretty much all in Vegas or Orlando. But back in the day, it would switch different locations. It used to be at Loyola Marymount, and for a time it was at UC Irvine, Long Beach State. So Kobe's, the summer before Kobe's rookie year, it was at Long Beach State at the Pyramid. So his first summer league game, I took my nephew to the game. We went up to see him, and at that point, you know, again, Kobe was the 13th pick of the first round. There was some buzz about him, but certainly not, you know, this is for sure the next Jordan, or, you know, there might have been some people like Sonny Vaccaro, the, you know, the Adidas, shoe guru that might have seen that, but most people weren't that aware of it. But so it surprised me when we got to the summer league game in Long Beach that it was sold out. And Kobe didn't have a particularly fantastic game. He played well, but I remember after the game with my young nephew, hoping to maybe get an autograph of Kobe. Well, when Kobe came out, it was total mayhem, right? It was like the height of, you know, it was like Justin Bieber or Jeremy Lin at the height of Lin's sanity or something, right? I thought, oh my gosh, this is a superstar. This is a rock star, right? And, you know,
yeah,
this is a weeknight in Long Beach of a summer league game. Right, he's not even played in an NBA game yet, so it really hit me there before he'd really accomplished anything on the court of significance that there's something about this guy that's exceptional, and obviously that proved to be the case. So those are a couple of my favorite Kobe memories and things to come to mind when I think of his 20-year career.
Thanks for sharing that. Good stuff. And on to the beloved Bull, obviously season over last night with a victory over the 76ers, 42-40, 8-game delta between last year and this year. Obviously a disappointment, though. We expect a lot more. Love to get your thoughts on the post-game press conference. I know you saw it. Anything to stick out for you? And I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I guess the one refreshing thing is all the flaws and concerns, they saw what we saw. A little late to do anything about it, right? So as the season went on, we were all hoping there'd be some sort of adjustments to at least maybe get them into the playoffs somehow. But I think that obviously the combination of injuries, and there's only so much you can do, you know, in trades and so on during the course of the season. I know during the season you and I were probably more optimistic than most Bulls fans, and we proved to be wrong. But I think our thinking was right in the sense of, gee, if this team could get healthy and have everybody together, you know, they can make a run at one of these playoff spots. And just, you know, and they obviously played well against Cleveland during the season. And like we've talked about, you just never know in a playoff matchup what could happen. And the Cavs seem to be back on track now, but, you know, later in the season, there were some things going on there where, you know, there was a little bit of implosion going on with LeBron, and is Tyronn Lue really ready to usher this team into the finals, into a championship? So, you know, I still had hopes that if they could keep the core healthy and get some kind of a run together, that it's, you know, things were still possible. Obviously a long shot, but the fact that they didn't even make the playoffs was pretty disappointing, and that, even though Dunleavy came back, you know, Rose went down again, Jimmy missed some games, so just it never came together in terms of the roster that they had in mind. And obviously, from reading some of the things and hearing some of the things in the press conference, how strongly the Bulls front office thinks of Noah, you know, as a key leader on that team, that, you know, he was missed probably more than we even realized, at least from the front office's confidence in him. And, you know, when they talked about the lack of leadership, lack of fight in the Bulls, you know, that's what Pax was saying in those press conferences. You know, I certainly see Noah as someone that would take the lead and things like that. Now, is his health, is his game enough to back that up? You know, even if he has that kind of spirit and attitude, is there enough game there to justify him being on the floor long enough to do something significant about it? I don't know. So it'll be interesting, you know, kind of reading between the lines. It appears that they'd like to have him back.
Well, I know I might be a little biased, and, you know, and I really like John Paxson. I think he's one of the best Bulls ever. I think he was a coach on the 72-10 team, and I think he's been a really rock-solid executive. I don't know about, you know, Gar Forman, but overall I think both of them have done a good job. This year, no doubt, was a massive disappointment, but I thought a lot of his comments yesterday were somewhat pointed at Jimmy, especially on leadership, and I agree with 100% what he said. If you're and basically the gist of it, you know, if you're talking about being a leader, there was just basically too much talk. The gist of it was there's too much talk about being a leader. It's a lot more in what you do. Michael Jordan never talked about being a leader. He was a leader, you know. And I thought there was a lot of that was kind of geared or pointed at Jimmy. And, you know, Jimmy's first year, without a doubt, as the man, quote-unquote, the man, was a failure. There was way too many distractions that he brought upon himself, way too much talk about being a leader, way too much talk about being the man and this is my team or whatever. All that was a bunch of nonsense that wasn't needed, you know, at least
right.
That's the way I felt on it. And I lost a lot of faith in him. You know, I don't know if he's the number one. I don't know if he's a guy you build your team around and expect to win titles with. I'm not sure anymore, and I never really was. And you know, I'm warming to the fact that I would like to see this team almost blow everything up. And let's just start over and hit rock bottom first. Because you can't really build a championship team unless you get some superstars. And those guys are usually found in the top five picks of the draft. And you're not going to get them if you, you know, build around Jimmy. You're going to be too good, but not good enough to win a title.
Right. You know, and I've thought a lot about that with Jimmy myself. And it just seems like, you know, points, even though he had some big games, right? He had, you know, the 50-point game and, you know, had some real scoring bursts this season. But to me, compared to some of the other elite scorers in the league, like a Curry or Thompson or Durant, it seems like points come a little harder for Jimmy, you know, in terms of, it seems like he almost wills his way to some of his points, right, in terms of, and you know, maybe that's because he's not a lights-out shooter. You know, he's improved a lot as a shooter, but not a lights-out shooter like a Klay Thompson, and, well, not many are, right? But
right, and not this just, year, though. That's a good point. You just touched on something, which I just want to stop you and point out. He was shot 37.8% last year from three, which is an excellent percentage for, you know, a guy who is not known as a shooter. Very respectable. It's fine if you're there. This year he shot 31%. And that is a major precipitous decline. When we're talking about the best team in the league shooting 41%, the worst team in the league shooting 31%, 10 percentage points separate the best and the worst. For you to drop from 37 to 31 is a big deal. And not good, you know, at all. So he dropped there, and he also dropped defensively. I thought his defense this year was very inconsistent, not often good. So nearly good enough as it was in the past.
Right. Well, and I agree with all of that. And I think he had to carry a heavier burden this year too, you know, because he was the leader. He and, you know, I'd say he and Powell obviously kind of carried the team for most of the season. You know, with Rose, you know, and just thinking about Jimmy's percentage going down, and it would be interesting to compare, because I know one of the stats they tended to show on the broadcast were that Rose's free throw attempts have been declining, which is implying that he's not attacking the basket like he used to and, you know, being as aggressive. And obviously we've talked a lot in past podcasts about Rose and injuries and how that's, you know, affected, you know, his, you know, more reckless style from when he was early in his career and winning MVP awards. So I'm wondering too, if that decline in Rose's penetration and attacking the basket, is affecting the looks that Jimmy is getting, right? Didn't seem like there were many times where Jimmy was catching and shooting, with an open look with the three, like either McDermott or Dunleavy. You know, they would tend to get those looks on occasion, or even Mirotić on occasion. But, just in terms of, I think if they are rebuilding, you obviously can't keep Powell around, right? It just it doesn't make sense for that. With Taj and Dunleavy each having 1 year left on the contracts that they have, maybe you kind of ride that out, or maybe you work out some sort of trade where that situation might be beneficial, from a contract standpoint. But, I think a young core, Jimmy's a little bit of a question mark in terms of, if he's not the number one, and I my gut tells me he is probably more of a number two option, right? And could be a pretty good one. And not many number two options in the league are drafted as late as he was into the league. But, kind of the young core of Portis, McDermott, Mirotić, Felicio, where has he been all season? I know when he was playing well those last couple of games, especially against Cleveland, and just thought, has he not merited any playing time before this with all the injuries? And, should he have gotten a chance sooner? Certainly crossed my mind. And then Holiday, it's funny. We had talked about Holiday a couple of months ago when we were talking about the Warriors and the Warriors model and other teams that try to emulate that, and the fact that a player like Holiday had been on the Warriors, and then Atlanta is one of those teams that's kind of a poor man's version of what the Warriors and Spurs are trying to do. And we talked through that and even mentioned Holiday as one of those players that had been a Warrior on the championship team and had been a Hawk. And so, interesting enough, he gets traded to the Bulls. And I thought he was one of the real bright spots for the last couple weeks of the season. And, doing things that I kind of expected Snell to do, all along, and never, never quite bought into to Snell. There were little flashes here and there, but Holiday, though, with his length and his energy, I think he could have a career as a rotation guy on a team. I don't know about as a starter, but as a, sixth, seventh man, I could see it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely you could see him coming off the bench and, providing some spark. I think he needs to shoot the ball a little better. There were several games where I felt like, you're looking at box score and he was 1-6 or 2-7. Just had a few too many of those games, but he does a lot of things well. He's one of the few guys on the team that was athletic. You just immediately noticed that his Bulls are lacking in athleticism. They just don't have it, and he was a lot more athletic, I think, than most guys on the team.
Yes, I totally agree. And just having someone with his length and speed, you're right. It was very noticeable, very dramatically noticeable, which that was a bright spot. If I had to make a move, I would try to move Rose, but his contract is so gaudy. I just don't know what you can do with that. And, I just have a sense that, neither Rose or Jimmy is the kind of leader, a vocal leader. And we talked about it a little bit on the last podcast, right? So it doesn't necessarily have to be one of those two guys. If you have somebody else doing it, we obviously point to the Curry, Thompson, and Draymond Green model of that, right? And then maybe Noah could be that guy. Maybe he is that guy. But, but I almost think that time has kind of passed with him, just at what stage he is of his career. So, those are my basic thoughts in terms of, it sounds like they're going to stick with Fred as the coach and, give him some more time to build things. But, obviously in that press conference with John Paxson, they talked about some expectations and some things they saw that the coaching staff was lacking in terms of just maybe focus and intensity and things that, that they're expecting more from next year. But it's certainly going to be an interesting offseason to see what happens with some of these player moves.
It sure will be. And, there's a big decision, right? What's going to happen with Noah? What's going to happen with Butler? What's going to happen with Rose, going forward? And it sounds like listening to Nick Friedell in Chicago, and I'm sure you haven't heard this, but there was a little bit of a
Noah Butler clash where those guys, you know, just didn't see eye to eye on leadership. You know, it's kind of Noah's locker room, and then Butler comes in as the man, and it seems like there were more clashes there than there actually was with Rose, according to Mick Friedell on ESPN 1000. So, you know, is he going to come back? Is Noah going to come back? And then you'd read other articles where, you know, the Bulls are pretty high on Noah and like his leadership in the locker room. So we'll see where it goes. I mean, I'm at the point after this season, I don't think bringing all three of those guys back or any of those guys back brings the title. I don't think a team built around Jimmy Butler wins a title. I don't see it happening, especially in a league with LeBron and Stephen Curry. And, you know, I don't think it does. So what are we doing? You know, blow it up. Let's start over.
Right. Yep, I agree. And you know, obviously where the Bulls might fall in the lottery will obviously impact what kind of player they can get. And as we talked a little bit on the last podcast as well about the NCAA tournament and then the draft preview, you know, even if it's a rebuilding mode, I can't see the Bulls, you know, fans or management settling for a 15 to 20 win season, right? I think they'd still like to see a team that could maybe make a run at 500, right, and have a chance to make the playoffs. It was interesting that the 42 wins that the Bulls had, I saw that was the most wins for a team in the East to miss the playoffs in what, almost 20 years, I think, 21 years or something. So,
is that correct? I was not aware of that. 42 wins is the most wins for a team to not make the playoffs in how many years?
In the East, and I'd have to look it up, but it's been a long time. So
really,
I think it was an Orlando team. So, well, and I think that kind of reinforced the point that you and I were making all along about how improved the East was this year.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
And that, and so, you know, having, and we even talked about fewer wins than the Bulls had last year, but still maybe, you know, not necessarily making it a worse season because the East had, you know, was improved overall, but obviously it came up just a little bit short. But, yeah, so there's some other interesting stats that we can maybe dig a little deeper in, but I did read that there was something that flashed up. Actually, even when the Bulls had won 41, that, you know, that's when that stat popped up. So, interesting that you know that most years in the East, certainly in the last, you know, decade or beyond, would get you in the playoffs. So,
no, absolutely.
And, you know, when we did our preseason predictions, you know, I don't think we anticipated Charlotte was going to be as good as they were, and obviously Boston was a little bit of a surprise, and I didn't think Detroit was going to make quite the jump that they did. You know, and the Pacers were a little bit of a question mark too because of Paul George's return from the injury, but kind of have to give them credit as well. So yeah, there were a few unexpected jumps, I guess you'd say, in the playoffs. And I know Brad Stevens has been getting a lot of accolades, but I also saw somebody remind me that, well, he hasn't won one playoff game or one playoff series yet. So let's not all line up behind Brad Stevens just yet. Obviously, he's having success with Boston and has really built that program back since Doc Rivers left. So I'm not trying to diminish how good a job that he's doing, but he hasn't won a playoff game yet. So let's not christen him quite yet. Kind of like the Anthony Davis MVP talk early in the season when I kind of squelched that, and obviously he had some injuries too, but that proved to be a little premature for Anthony Davis as well.
Great calling that, Tim. We'll have you on again very soon to discuss playoff preview. Thanks again for joining the Bullseye. He has been more than generous with your time. All the best to you, brother. Looking forward to having you on again soon.
Always a pleasure, Fred. Yeah, everyone fill out your NBA playoff brackets. I know it's not quite as dramatic because of the length of the series, but I still like doing a bracket similar to the NCAA tournament and see how it maps out. So we'll talk about the playoff matchups and predictions and compare brackets next time.
Sounds good. Thanks, Tim. Have a good one, brother.